You are now checked in to Stand Up New York Labs. Oh, yeah.
Stone cold.
My Don't friends, you know welcome to my sexy party. Podcast. That sip of the straw you just heard was my sexy guest, Emily Heller.
Oh, hello.
This is my friend Emily Heller. She moved to L.A. Let's say some credits right off the top. We've got a Conan credit. We've got a John Oliver credit. What else do we have? We've got a masterful writering credit.
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
W-Q-P.
True writer. True writer. She moved to Los Angeles. How long ago?
Like 10 months ago?
10 months ago to write for a Fox series called Surviving Jack. She is listed on a comics to watch list by Variety, by Comedy Central. She's a fucking blessed lady with a blessed perspective. And I'm so excited
hashtag
that you
blessed.
Were hashtag blessed, hashtag Emily Heller.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome
Thank
to
you for all those credits.
You know, you earned them and I'm boasting them. So we were just talking about you're in town because
I had a college gig on Tuesday. That was fun. And then I just wanted to visit because my brother just moved here.
How many siblings do you have?
I have two siblings.
Both creative?
They both live here. They're both creative. Yes. My sister's a filmmaker. My brother's a musician.
Yeah. You posted something on Facebook about your sister doing such an amazing...
Yeah. It's going to be awesome. She just made a movie called The Diary of a Teenage Girl.
That and stars, big like, names?
Kristen Wiig.
What?
Alexander Skarsgård. It's like Chris Maloney's in it. Yeah. It's going to be really good. I'm excited
Your
about
mother's
it.
Womb is just an incubator
a
for
really
a comics
place.
To watch list.
Yes. Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, my parents, I mean, it's very lucky that we're actually like
doing it
because, you know, it's all we ever.
But there's got to be some magic to the way you were raised. Wait, what about your brother?
My brother's a musician. He just moved here. You know, he's still carving his way, but he's like extremely talented as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. Very funny. Very good at music and everything.
What's his band called?
His band is called She Beards, although I don't know if they're still playing.
Relatable.
Yeah.
Totally
yeah.
relatable for a Pakistani girl. You don't know if they're still playing? He
yeah,
might be doing a solo thing.
Well, he just moved, so like the other members of his band still live in the Bay Area. He just moved here from Oakland. But the band is basically him and his girlfriend. But he also does
I
like
would imagine
his own.
He's a Heller.
He also does, makes music under the name King Latifah.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he also records audiobooks and everything. He does like audio production and he makes beats and stuff.
You know what I just thought of? When you said record audiobooks, maybe we're going to be in a time where like there's going to be improvised books where like you just, you know, surrey a book.
I don't think it's called a book anymore if you improvise it.
What? Well, no, because what are you doing when you're writing? You're just sort of typing.
Right,
I feel like I just invented it.
You edit it. Oh, so you think
so? Then someone could edit it down.
People are going to write down.
I mean, they may as well. Isn't that kind of how like all these reality stars that have books? They just they're like, I was born. It was in New Jersey.
Okay.
I love cupcakes.
Okay, here's the thing. So you're saying like the improvised aspect of it is that at some point someone thinks about what it's going to be. Someone just thinks of it.
Yeah, no, like, yeah. Here's
so
how...
that's all books. All books are improvised.
Yeah, I guess that's true. All right, so I invented books, but I was, like, many centuries late.
Because audiobooks, like an improvised audiobook, where you're just telling a story and you don't know
I guess
where
it's a podcast,
go.
And you don't get a huge advance for it.
We would tell sort of, like, improvised stories when I was working as a camp counselor to try and get the kids to fall asleep. Like, you tell them intentionally super boring stories
yeah.
to try and get them to
and
fall
the paint
asleep.
And dried slower.
Yeah. Just be like, and he kept walking. Walking and walking and walking, and when he thought
10 minutes
he couldn't
later,
walk, yeah. And then they're like, "Yeah, it's great." And my friend Sheena would always like preface all of these stories that she was clearly making up as she went along by being like, "This is a story my mom used to tell me every night before I went to sleep." She'd be like, "There were like people would have cell phones in it," and be like, "What?
Your mom was a genius, Sheena.
Yeah. She predicted cell phones."
My friend Emily Heller.
Hi.
Hi. I guess maybe, so do you miss New York?
You know, today has been a beautiful New York day. I have like a packed schedule from like 1 p.m. to midnight, basically. Yeah. And it's like the perfect kind of like, I have all my shit with me. Like, I'm ready to go.
I've got a phone charger.
I've got it all planned. I brought my phone charger. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
And but like yesterday, it was just like dumping rain and so miserable. And it was like raining inside the subway station. I wanted to murder everyone.
Yesterday, there was a story about a couple that held hands and jumped off the bridge. And I was like, perfect plan for today. Like, I could not agree more. Did you hear about that story?
No.
It's viral, man. They made it.
Whoa. Did they survive?
No, they died. But also another thing is two details that I don't like about it. They didn't die right away. So it was just like long live the pain and the thoughts of what you did. And then the other thing, a little controversial, they did kill someone before they did it. So
okay.
That made it less relatable.
I think the whole thing's a little controversial. To root for
don't
a suicide.
Recommend it. I don't recommend it.
But it is like, I imagine like if I, when I get old, I want to have the option of doing that.
Yes. You know my dad just told me, well, my grandmother has Alzheimer's, which is like really sad, but she's being, I mean, it makes you hilarious, but it's not.
But
funny.
Yeah.
Like she like walks around. She thinks she's like the queen of her old folks home.
Oh my God.
And whenever they visit, she's like, oh, these people, you know, they're really hard to take care of, but I do it. And we thought also she moved to Canada when she was like, I think 28, never learned English, was just sort of like the culture was like my grandfather took care of her, her kids took care of her. And she's very much about keeping it in the family, like, you know.
Yeah.
It's a Muslim, you know, it's a Muslim thing.
Diasporic type of, yeah.
Yes, I'm Googling it. I know it. Diasporic is...
It's like diaspora. It's like a diasporic community is like an immigrant community that, yeah, stays pretty self-contained and doesn't assimilate.
Mm, you learning on my sexy podcast. her old folks home, it's like a lot of black people. Mm-hmm. And we were like, ooh, how's Emmy going to do with all the black people? And we walked in and she was like in a holding hands orgy with all of them, just like passing, just like fully embracing all of them, which I think that's kind of a nice thing.
Would she
thing
not
about.
Have done that earlier
no,
in her
no,
life?
No, no, she would have said something weird and racist.
Oh, wow. So it's like had a positive effect on how she views other people. She's like forgetting her racism, maybe.
It's been great for her personality.
Have you heard about they're building this, or they built this community in, I forget, some European country for people with Alzheimer's, where it's an enclosed community where they get to live in apartments and go shopping and things like that. They don't need money. They just like, it's enclosed, but they can have their routines and they don't need constant care.
Well, they would all just shoplift.
Like, monitored. Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
Good.
And so like, and they have a store and they have like a movie theater and they have just things where they can just sort of like wander in and out and be totally safe, but still feel like they are living their lives too.
I guess that makes it better because really, so what my dad was saying was like, you know, if I get to this point, just shoot me.
Wow.
And I was like, that's hilarious. I'm going to bring it up at the podcast. But
yeah,
really,
this
like,
has been
you...
so morbid so far.
It always gets there.
right away.
As soon as I bring up that fake couple that jumps off a bridge. but do you think, I guess with that community, I maybe would want to live through that. But would you want, if you had Alzheimer's, would you want to?
I mean, I'm not excited about being old in any condition. I don't think Alzheimer's runs in my family, so I'm trying not to think about that
Ooh,
happening.
Fancy you with your full brain.
But I don't know. It is definitely, it's hard to think about because I'm also not planning on having children. So I'm like, there's no one who's going to want to take care of me anyway.
One wants to anyway.
Right, yeah. No one wants to do it. But I would feel like if I pushed out a fucking fat baby, I'd feel fine, fine making them take care of
me. The fat ones take the finest care. With the plump hands.
Anything that has to come out of your vagina is like fatter than it should be. You know what I mean? Like all babies are fat. Basically.
I just realized that one period is one person. one period per person. No, that like every month when you get your period, that it's just
that's like one
that it's not a thousand
person.
Babies. Like when a guy
like
jizzes,
when a guy ejaculates. Yeah,
because I was trying something on stage with it, where I was like, guys, take it easy. I'm like bleeding 1,000 babies right now, and at the end, a bunch of people were like, listen, dummy, it's one baby.
Yeah, it's one egg that's released. It, like in rare occasions, like. Some people release a couple at a time, but very rarely. If you're on fertility drugs, it'll make you release more.
Well, I'm always on fertility drugs.
Well, okay. So there we go. And yet you haven't gotten pregnant. Why is that?
I keep having sex with women.
Okay. That might be getting in the way.
I feel like my wife is infertile. I want to get back to you, although I'd like to remind everyone, my sexy podcast. I'm this is like the fourth or fifth episode.
Oh,
and
really?
I'm just still learning.
You're still figuring
about
it out.
When to say my sexy podcast.
Yeah.
Do you? I mean,
I don't really mention. Do you guys have sponsors where you have to be like, hello, now? This
no,
is
but I think I'm gonna soon start doing a fake sponsor so that
okay.
sponsors know that it's possible.
That is possible. But, there's sponsors just listening, being like, I wish I knew whether she was open to being sponsored. You know, if she had like
big
inserted.
Shout out to Nike.
I don't really say the name of. On my podcast, we have a bunch of different segments, so we break it up by that, by being like, it's time for Wiki of the Week, or like things like that.
And what is the name of your podcast?
My podcast is called Baby Geniuses.
Baby Geniuses. Feel free to say it 7 or 8 times.
All right, yeah. Please listen to my podcast.
Just break up that fluid conversation.
We're on like episode 60 now or something.
What?
We're getting up there.
And you started it in New York. Your podcast partner moved to L.A.?
She moved to L.A., yeah.
For
the
podcast?
No, that would be... batshit insane. She moved to LA because she got a job designing characters for a new Netflix animated show.
Oh,
called,
Lisa.
Yeah.
That's Adam.
Adam Conover's girlfriend.
Conover's girlfriend.
Lisa Hannawalt, amazing cartoonist.
Shout out to Lisa.
Yeah. Shout out to BoJack Horseman on Netflix that's going to be coming out eventually.
Shout out to Orange is the New Black, which I have a small part on.
Oh, you do?
In terms of watching it.
Season 2?
In terms of watching
Oh, my God.
Season 2, I have
How
a small
is that?
Part. I just... While you were talking, I admitted that I'm not actually a part of it.
Oh.
That I just watch it.
Oh, okay.
Like, I have a small part in
well,
why
I mean,
it was
tapes,
renewed because
it... It tapes in New York. It's got a lot of lesbian stuff going on it.
Yeah,
that wouldn't
I
be, like, totally
lying about
of...
small credits might be a really good way to...
Yeah, because you could always be like, oh, they cut my scene.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. Wait, getting back to old people, just but changing the subject slightly. Have you thought about
Thank God.
Kind of old person you want to be?
Yes, like totally inappropriate. Tell it like it is.
Uh-huh. Sassy, like, horny grandma.
Sassy,
kind
horny
of?
Grandma wearing all the comfortable clothes. But my wife is a wardrobe stylist, and if she can stick around and make it all the way through to this point, she can like give me some like flares and accessories.
Oh yeah,
maybe a flag in my hair or something like that. Yeah,
so you're
way
just
too,
like
way too many really young friends that clearly hang out with me because I pay for the lunch.
Okay,
yeah, you gotta keep it young.
Keep young people around you. Yeah, that'll be interesting.
What
to
about
try
you?
To... Yeah, I mean that sounds pretty good.
I'm gonna learn how to moonwalk. And
I've been
that's
thinking
how I'll get
about.
Around everywhere.
I've been thinking about recently, like I kind of want to get boudoir shots taken now, like while I'm young, and then be the kind of old lady who has like boudoir shots of herself on
yes!
her walls. Like not hang them up on my walls until I'm like 70, but then like have them up. And then when like my nieces and nephews come over who don't exist yet, but when they do, they'll be like, man, Aunt Emily was kind of a fox. Like what's going on here?
That's how
you
get
be
them
like,
to take care of you.
Yes, exactly. I'll be like, I mean, and I live in LA now and I'm planning on staying there, but like my brother and my sister both live in New York right now. So I'm going to be like the aunt whenever they have kids. I'm going to be like the aunt that takes them to Disneyland and stuff.
Yeah.
And like when they're older, they're going to come clean out. I want to like move into one of those like weird LA like Brady Bunch houses with all the rocks and stuff, like really 70s style, and just be like, I want to be real kooky.
You've got to be real fun.
Yeah.
That, and I think actually your odds might be the same as if you had had a child, if you just create amazing memories with other people's kids.
Yeah.
And it's easier to stay likable. So be removed.
Yeah.
Give them those presents.
Just save all my money to
now
spoil
them. Now that I think
them.
About it, like all the people in my life that have like been the people, like a couple of my parents' friends, I'm not going to accuse them on this podcast because I know they listen. They're devout listeners of my second podcast. But like they've like given me nice presents and I'm like, yo, what's in it for you? Now I realize.
They're expecting you to wipe their ass later.
I'll do it.
Once I or don't twice. Think you will. I don't think
I'll
you
do
will.
It once or twice.
What if it's like your parents need that at the same time? You're going to prioritize your parents.
Two hands. Boom.
Line them up. Swipe.
In
swipe,
fact, actually,
swipe.
If you just like tweet out this podcast right now and screen save it.
Uh-huh.
Show it to me later. I'll at one point change your diaper.
Like, you're telling your listeners that right now?
I'm telling Nike as a sponsor that that's the other incentive that I give their listeners.
Right. I think I also want to be like, have you ever read been to that blog Advanced Style? Where it's like a fashion blog for like old women in New York.
Ooh.
It's so good. And it's like all those women who wear like really nice, expensive clothes in New York, but that like very put together and like kooky jewelry and stuff.
Yeah, because that's sexy too.
Yeah. I feel like I'm going to try and be that kind of old person and end up looking just like crazy, just totally crazy. But I don't know.
Mm.
I would love to have like a Golden Girls situation too, I think.
I'd love to do a reunion of this episode when we are old,
yes,
and then check off all.
Also,
let's take boudoir shots.
Yeah,
no boudoir shots on that couch at the end of this episode.
Yeah, I feel like I'm planning on doing like a reunion of every podcast I've ever been on in about 60 years.
I mean, that's probably what, because it'll be retro then. It'll be like, remember podcasts?
Oh my god,
what if we had a podcast?
Shit, do you think they're gonna go away?
Well, once audiobooks that are improvised come out, be like, oh, what were podcasts?
We'll just call them improvised audiobooks, and people are just going to stop putting thought into books. Oh, man.
My friend, I want to get right into your life here.
Okay. What do you want to know?
All your secrets.
Okay.
Eventually.
I don't know if I have any. I don't have any secrets.
It's so nice to live in LA. The other day, that was months and months ago, I wrote you saying, how do you like start writing for TV? So can you do a little bit walkie through that?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I got my job writing for TV because, well, first of all, I have good representation. That's not a thing that you guys could just go get very
just
easily.
Just go get it.
But a thing that helps is to have a pilot written. An original pilot that has your voice in it and shows that you know how to write a pilot. It doesn't have to be that good. Write a really bad draft and then fix it. That's how people do it. It's called a puke draft. And then, once you have a pilot written, that's something that you can show to people who are hiring for TV shows if they're thinking about hiring you. And especially if you're a stand-up comic thinking about writing for a TV show, like, it's good to... It's good to have the, like, put some of your jokes in the pilot. That makes it easier to write it. And then if you're stand-up looking for a writing job, your script doesn't have to be as good, but the jokes have to be really funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, they know that you can punch.
Yeah, because they're not hiring you because you're really good at story. They're hiring you to pitch jokes.
Yeah.
And so that's, like, yeah.
So then once you were hired.
Once I was hired. Then I worked there.
You worked there. Then you had all
it was
free
like
food from
basically
the office.
I got recommended for this job by someone who knew the show creator, another comedian who knew the show creator, and they read my pilot and they watched my Conan set, and I had a meeting with them. I was extremely charming in the meeting, and
as always.
Yeah, and then I moved to LA to work there, and I was like, you know, it was a lot easier than I thought it would be to work on a TV show, because I was like, oh God, I don't know how to do so many things that go into like making a TV show happen. And it was like, oh, but there's other people there who do. And we collaborate on all of it. And so it's like, if you feel stuck, I also was in like a very supportive room. So it was really good. But
awesome. Sweet. And the show's called
Surviving Jack, starring Christopher Maloney. We don't know if we're coming back for a second season yet. When is this episode going to be released?
Maybe in a couple weeks.
Okay, well, so we'll probably know by then whether or not we're coming back. So
by then you'll know. We'll know.
Yeah.
We'll get Nike to tweet it out.
Yeah, I am like hoping for the best but planning for the worst. So like, you know, most shows don't have a very good shot at a second season, and ours has been like the same as everyone else's. Like, we're doing terrible in the ratings, but so are most comedy shows. So you never know. But I would love for it to come back, and if it doesn't, I'm excited about the idea of working on something else too.
Cool. And then also in this life, like, either way, I mean, if it doesn't come back, that just means that now you can submit to other shows and all that stuff.
Yeah. And if it doesn't come back, it was like a really great experience. And I got to meet. The thing was, it was like I met the coolest people working for that show, that the idea, like, I would love to work with them again. But I'm also like, if that's what these rooms are like, I'm so excited to meet another room full of people that cool.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
How do you stay, I mean, how long have you been doing stand-up for?
I guess I've been doing stand-up since I moved to San Francisco. I had done like some open mics before I moved to San Francisco, but once I moved to San Francisco, that's when it really started, and that was like 2008. So I guess like 6 years. Yeah.
Amazing. And then over the course of the career, with highs and lows and stuff, do you feel like you're more of a regulated person?
You're an amazing interviewer, by the way.
Really?
That question was nonsense.
What do you mean? I'm saying no, because the other
I
day
I feel like I'm a regulated
no, like
person?
Like, do you get like super excited, super bummed? Because you just said, I think it's because when you said it sounds whether the show comes back or not,
yeah.
I like I'll be positive, I'll be either positive, way.
Yeah.
Truly, as an artist,
yeah.
Is that just like a philosophy that you have that keeps you sort of regular? Because I think it's been for me a learning process in terms of like not getting. I mean, it's celebrating the fact that I've got a callback for something.
Yeah.
But not like attaching any self-worth
to it. But not getting frustrated if it doesn't go past that.
Yes.
Do you get frustrated easily?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, it's this world where like you're constantly being put in situations where you're like, not constantly, but sometimes
yeah.
it comes around, you work hard, and then you're in a situation where you're so close. And sometimes it pans out and it's like, yeah, I'm
yeah.
worth a little bit more. I was picked,
yeah.
you know? And it's nice to give in to that feeling when you're like part of the cool kids crew now that
yes.
I've been cast on something. But then at the same time, what comes with that is like a feeling of like just feeling shitty about yourself because you weren't, because of whatever reason,
yeah.
you weren't.
It's a balance between like, I definitely think it's a good idea to like when people offer you validation, accept it.
Yeah.
And if they don't offer it to you, don't worry about it.
Yes.
Like be excited about the stuff that you are getting and the stuff that you aren't getting. Don't worry about.
Yes.
And that's a way to like, because it's hard to be like, we a lot of times we decide whether something's important before we get it. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? And then if you don't get it, you feel bummed.
Yeah.
And if you do get it, you kind of just stay the same. But if you just don't expect any of it, then it's all just positive. I mean, I'm very like, I feel weird giving advice about how to stay positive in this industry because I've just been really lucky where I haven't had time to get impatient or bitter about my career. Like, there's nothing that I've really wanted that I haven't gotten yet. You know what I mean?
Girl, you a slam dunk.
I mean, like, part of that is, like, you know, I am ambitious, but my sights have been very, like, what's, like, focused
what's
on the next
step.
Not,
yeah.
like, I'm not, like, trying to get my own TV show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not, I don't feel like there's something that I really deserve that I haven't gotten yet. And, like, I only had to audition for Montreal, like, 2 years. I got it the
yeah.
second year that I auditioned, which is, like, really fast.
Yeah, yeah,
by
yeah.
By most, you know, and I'm not saying that to brag. I'm saying that to say, like.
No, well, you work hard.
Obviously, I'm not bitter because, like, if I was bitter, that would be fucking insane.
But I think, that there's also just, it seems like, a mentality with you where that's realistic and that's grounded.
Right.
That it's taken me time to learn that.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard anytime you're in like an artistic pursuit where it does feel really arbitrary and there's so many really talented people who aren't getting what they deserve in
yeah.
the industry too, that it feels like, yeah, there's plenty of opportunity to get better.
I guess just,
things.
I mean, maybe it's been like sort of a longer run for me, and right now I've got like good stuff going on and it feels good. But there's been, you know, if I look at my career from a bird's eye view, there's been like times where I've had a show in Canada.
Yeah.
I've had a show and it feels
I've
good.
I've seen you on
and
TV before.
And it's hard. But and then just to sort of, it's been a learning process to not use that free time as a motivation to create your
yeah.
own stuff.
When you don't
that.
Have stuff going on, it's
yes.
really hard to be like, well, I guess I'm gonna like just make something awesome
yes,
right now. Normally
totally.
When there's like not shit going on, I'm like, fuck, I'm a failure. Like,
yeah,
what am I
yeah,
doing?
Yeah.
yeah. Like I'm in a slump in my stand up right now. Like that's happening for real. And part of that is because like when I moved to LA for this writing job, there became a point in our schedule where I couldn't schedule stand-up shows because I didn't know how late we were going to be in the room, and I'm not at a point in my career where I
yeah.
can drop in on shows in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Like people don't know me there as well
yeah.
as they did in New York, and so it was kind of like I just kind of stopped doing stand-up. I stopped writing for stand-up. I was just doing this job. I was doing stand-up on the weekends sometimes, but I wasn't writing new material. And then when the show ended, it was like, okay, now I gotta get back into it. And it was just sort of like I felt so rusty, and I still like my hiatus is about to end and I'm just kind of finally getting back into it and writing some new jokes. And it just feels like, oh my God, I feel like I've gotten worse as a stand-up since I started writing for TV. But I also have like a shitload of other projects going on now that I wouldn't have had the confidence to work on before, and I wouldn't have had the momentum to work on before. So it's just kind of like, it's more like I fell in love with this new discipline in the way that I fell in love with stand-up when I first started doing it, where I was like, oh, there's this thing that I'm like kind of good at and I'm really excited about getting better at it and like seeing how far I can push my skills in it. And whereas like stand-up, it's like, you know, I've been doing it for 6 years and like there's definitely still a lot of room for like, I want to be a bunch better stand-up, but I don't have 100% of my time to devote to it.
But it's
it
like
anymore.
A honeymoon phase with this new
I'm still in the honeymoon phase with like TV writing, and so now I'm like working on other stuff for that and like feeling like that's where, you know, my career is going for right now. But I don't, but I'm also doing a shitload of stand-up right now too, so I don't know, I feel like divided, and I feel like my stand-up is not in the best place right now, but I feel like I'm kind of finally, of course I'm finally getting back into the groove of things right when I'm about to probably start working again. So
yeah, I guess there's always that too. It's like you wish for, it's careful what you wish for. Or I feel like we've just got a certain capacity for happiness, and regardless of the situation you're in. I think I'm like a pretty happy person. Admittedly, get down on myself for sure. Go down on myself constantly.
Hell yeah.
Admittedly, I'm constantly going down on myself.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like before I started doing stand-up, I considered myself a very happy person. And so I'm just like have exceeded my wildest expectations for how my life would turn out. Like I didn't know if I would have a career that I liked. I didn't know what I was going to do like coming out of college. I just really had no fucking idea. And this industry is such a crapshoot that it's like the fact that I am making any money at all doing something that I love so much, I'm like, I will never complain.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, at least not wholeheartedly.
Okay, but, so then also, do you think, was there something about your upbringing that that enabled you to be this like happy, creative, driven person? Because with your sister and this movie and you, like...
I mean, my parents were very like... a lot of positive reinforcement. My mom especially was very much like told us we were amazing all the time, so that made me like, first of all, love attention and need attention and feel like I deserved attention. So that contributed. But then I was also like, I was a pretty miserable like middle schooler. Like I had a very tough time when I like hit puberty and like was not cool, and then in high school things kind of like righted themselves again. And
like,
I sort
guys,
of...
I'm fucking amazing. I've been told for many years.
I know, why
pay
are
attention.
You not? Yeah, John F. O'Donnell has a really funny joke about that, where he's just like, his, you know, his mom told him he was great all the time, and he's like, so it's really confusing to me when girls don't want to go out with me, because I'm like, haven't you heard I'm the most handsome boy in all of the land? you should listen to his album. I'm butchering it, but I honestly don't. I think it like it took me having like a period of like feeling really sorry for myself for a few years, and then things sort of like writing themselves and figuring out who I was. And then honestly, like this sounds really like fucking pretentious and self-congratulatory. I don't know. This sounds really weird. I'm sure, but like I took a class in college on race that really changed. Just kind of like woke me up to my privilege in a way that I hadn't been before. And after that, I have never wanted to complain about anything in my life.
Because
I was like, I'm so, so, so lucky. I've been given every opportunity, and there's a million ways in which I am benefiting from things that are making other people's lives harder.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel like there's nothing, I am getting way more things than I am entitled to already. So I don't feel entitled to anything beyond what I already have.
You also own several slaves. Is that not
right?
True?
That is another thing that I am just like super grateful for, you know, just like every
they're all
day,
tying
her
shoe. Yeah. And tying it repeatedly.
Right. Exactly. I mean,
they are adorable. last night, actually, I had a moment that was like that race class, but it was, you heard about Liza Dye.
Yeah.
Yeah, so comic. This is a comic from, I believe, South Carolina or North Carolina, one of the Carolinas, moved here. Sassy, strong, beautiful chick doing comedy, and she fainted, fell in the train tracks. The guy, like, pulled the brake, and the train, like, went over her, but then it was her leg that was damaged, but was able to, with many surgeries, be put back together, and it was beautiful to see how the comedy community kind of, like, rallied around her, because she didn't have health care, And like people like Zach Braff and Louis C.K. and Aziz Ansari donated like $10,000.
Oh my God.
I donated several thousands. But I, last night she did a set for the first time since the accident. She'd just been released from the hospital a few days before.
Wow.
It happened 3 months ago. And she was just like, she's a newer comic. It was obviously like the best thing I've ever seen her do. Like, I mean, it was one of the coolest things to see because she really was speaking so honestly and earnestly about how happy she was to be alive.
Oh, wow.
And how, like, she was just like, you know, guys, like, you people don't survive this. Like, oh, I'm so lucky.
Yeah, wow. Fuck, that is like a big, that makes you want to just, like, work so hard.
Work so hard, yeah. And also, like, it was a rainy day. And so I was just like, oh, like, I just want to nap all day. Like, I hate, like, this is just a bummer of a day. And then you realize, like, no, it's fucking, I also,
life is beautiful.
Life is beautiful. What else? I was watching this thing. There, someone said, like, you've got 30,000 days in your life. And that was another crazy thing where it's like,
holy
yo, 30,000?
That feels, like, low.
That feels so low.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But.
So all of that.
Yeah. All of that. I'm, like, very, I try, obviously, like, it's very easy to complain about stuff and to bitch about stuff and talk shit about people. Like, I'm not going to say, like, I don't do that. But in big picture look at my life, I'm like, things are going awesome. There's nothing that I'm, like, hoping for. But, like, but yeah, I don't know.
I call my mom at the end of every podcast and I ask her, like, basically to regurgitate a Dr. Oz article, but she never admits that it's Dr. Oz. She's like, well, 19 tips on staying trim. No, but it's always about, like, the men, like, keeping positive.
Is your mom a very positive person?
She's a very stern and, like, by the books, practical. She's a very practical person.
Yeah.
So she really does, she's a positive, but in the way that she looks at depression as, like, a waste of time.
Huh.
Like, whenever, the way she would, when I would be upset when I was younger about something, she'd be like, all right, well, it's too bad that those girls were making fun of you, but, you know, several women are getting raped right now in several different countries. They're actually cutting into their vaginas with sharp objects, just, like, getting very detailed about, like, the worst things. And I find myself actually, like, when my wife is upset about something, when Shauna's upset about something, I'll, like, use the same approach.
Oh my God. But then I realize it.
No, she hates it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is too, like, I'm very lucky to not have, like, actual any clinical mental problems. Like, I don't have, like, clinical depression. I can't even imagine what that is like.
Yes.
So it's also, like, it's very easy for me to stay positive when I'm like, I don't have, like, an actual medical reason why I shouldn't be.
But I think that sometimes, I mean, whether it's clinical or not, that reminding yourself about the things that you're grateful for.
Yes. I mean, that's, like, been scientifically, I mean, not totally, but, like, they've done studies where they show that, like, people who count their blessings regularly are happier than people who don't.
So let's go. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. I've got, like, 30,000.
You're not
going to
tell.
I've got 30,000 blessings in there each, every day that Jesus Christ put me on this earth.
Oh, my God. I was just having lunch nearby, and there was a girl sitting at the table next to me wearing a Jews for Jesus t-shirt, just sort of, like, looking around the cafe, and I was like, oh God, she's gonna talk to me, and she didn't, but I was kind of, like, hoping that she would.
Dude, you know what happened to me just a few days ago?
What?
I was kind of debating whether I would
Jews for Christianity.
Yes. And then the next day to Islam, and then the next day to Buddhism. I'm so lucky at the order. Okay, so I'm gonna be vague about it, but this is a crazy thing. I got booked to do, sometimes I do keynote talks on, like, diversity or like motivational speaking type things. You just, like, basically I do my stand-up and then every now and then I'm like, but seriously, guys, believe in yourself. And then I go to my hotel room and cry.
I love that. Oh wait, hang on, I just unplugged something.
Plug it back in. Okay. Yet another blessing.
Yes.
So I get hired to do this thing, and throughout the day I'm noticing people are like, I'm like, oh, how did you, like, get pulled into this event? And people are like, oh, yeah, well, the pastor and then this and the, and, like, kind of churchy things. But I didn't think anything of it. Yeah. I'm hired to talk about diversity. I go up it's been like a really long day, and I'm like impressed by how like these kids, it was, you know, like 100 kids and not like a gym auditorium type setup. And I'm talking about racial diversity, and I'm talking about like embracing, because like a true thing in my life and in my career is that embracing like these parts about me that I was once embarrassed about kind of became empowering. And then, you know, sort of like it's embracing those things is the reason why I have anything in my career. Mm-hmm. And so I get to the point, I get to a point where I'm talking about sexuality and coming out and how that was very difficult and blah, blah, blah.
Wait, you're gay?
Oh, and Emily has left the building. So quick.
That's it. I'm done.
Ooh, she just piggybacked her slaves too. She's so down to earth. Okay. So then I do the talk. Great. I mean, like it went great. The next morning, the person who booked me is driving me to the airport, and she's like, "Well, how do you feel about your keynote?" First of all, I've never really had. I mean,
someone ask, "How do you feel about it?" That's yeah. what you say when you don't like it.
Yeah, and I'd never. I mean, not to be cocky again, but like especially with stand up, when you merge that with like a motivational talk,
yeah.
you should actually do it.
You fucking crush.
Because you crush, because yeah. people, you know, people, there's like messages and messages and messages. So when you mix in some comedy,
some jokes, people it's are like, oh, fuck, my God. Yes.
Yeah. So I was like, I think it went well. And she was like, well, we were very shocked.
What?
Yeah.
There's literally nothing about your identity that cannot be Googled.
Yes. But,
like, nothing shocking about, you know what I mean? Like,
no.
I'm sure there's parts of your identity that cannot be Googled, but
my Wikipedia page says gay, gay, lesbian, gay, 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 gay.
Yeah.
That's all it says.
So they didn't know you were gay?
No. They thought that I was going to talk about racial diversity.
Oh my God.
And just like being a girl in comedy. And it was really crazy because it was like a half hour drive to the airport, and she really just like reveled in this sort of like.
What did she say to you about it?
She was like, well, it was a lot of sexuality talk to like kids, you know? I mean, how old were you when you realized you were gay? Like basically saying it was inappropriate to talk about sexuality to high school kids. Meanwhile, these kids like had like marijuana flags drawn on their, they yeah. were kind of like, you know, inner
okay.
city.
Okay, high school kids fucking yeah. know.
And kids came up to me after being like, thank you, I'm gay. Like I didn't, like I felt very ashamed
yeah.
of it. This
Those is, are the people who need to hear about
yes.
it.
Yes, and also I said like,
it's not
I
like
think,
you were like talking about like, here's how you ate a pussy.
Yeah, well I did. That was my PowerPoint.
Yeah.
But thankfully it didn't look.
And you're like, this one's mine.
Yeah.
Up here, this photo's mine.
And this is the real thing. Come touch. But it was so, it was just crazy.
Doesn't, I feel and like she, you should feel way better about
oh,
that.
Oh yeah, no.
Oh my
well,
God.
I felt, I did, and I kind of, I've gotten good at like, just like being quiet and listening uh-huh. and sort of just letting, like letting her hear what she's saying to me. And then I was like, well, I was really happy with it. I think, the kids were happy with it. And I'm sorry, it seems like there was a disconnect in what you wanted and what you got, but this is who I am, so I can't change that. It's probably a learning process for you in terms of booking
in terms
the future.
Of booking, but hail
and
Satan.
Then she kind of like, she like came into the airport with me, and I got this feeling like she wanted me to cry or something.
What?
Anyways, I just was like very straight. Like I didn't apologize, obviously. I got on the plane, and then when I landed, that by the time I landed, there was an email, and it was an apology, and she it was like, you know, you could scroll for minutes and she was apologizing, and it was a full apology. So it was kind of
what did,
cool
like,
and crazy.
What was the gist of her apology? What was she apologizing for?
That she was the one that was ignorant.
Wow.
She said that she sat in church and realized with tears, like she was very emotional about it.
Wow.
So in the end, I mean, like when I got on the plane, I was like, that is not a nice lady. But then, I mean, I guess. But the other thing that's crazy is that I talked about this on stage. I talked about the process of coming out to my Muslim relatives and, like, them abandoning me. And then having, like, one specific cousin that, like, wrote me saying with the apology. So it was just, like, a sped up version yeah. of that, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it sounds like she was not a bad person, but yeah. who was just, like, very jolted.
Yeah.
By what you did, and it took her like a while to process it.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just like, we are lucky to live in a place where most people went through that a long time ago in their lives.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and we don't have to deal with people who haven't met a gay person yet.
It feels surreal because of where you, because living in New York or LA or Toronto, where I grew up. Okay, cool. So,
yeah.
What's your daily aspiration, JK? But I got better at interviewing, right?
Yeah, totally. Right? For like a second, we only had like 5 seconds of dead air right there.
All right.
I do think that it is like, we kind of forget because we, for the most part, get to choose who we interact with day to day. That, yes. Like, I mean, I feel like when I was in college, like, I went through like a big like self-actualization when I was like 15. That was like a big, you know, everyone has to kind of go through that where you're like, oh, fuck, this is who I am. Like, blah,
oh,
blah,
shit.
Blah. Yeah. Like that thing that normally happens like when you're a teenager. And then like when I got to college and I realized that there were people there who hadn't gone through that yet. Mm-hmm. I was like, what the fuck? Do I have to like wait here for you guys to catch up? Like, what is happening?
Get in my mom's like, pussy already.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you're kind of like, you sort of just have to like keep your distance from those people until they sort of catch up and try and be like supportive, like the way it sounds like you dealt with that perfectly.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to get
to. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to give my mother a call.
Oh, now. Hell yeah.
She is the magic eight ball of life. But it sounds like your mom was.
Are you worried that your mom's going to run out of advice to give your podcast listeners?
No, because the Huffington Post keeps on writing articles about, like, as a woman, how do you keep your mind not mishmash? So she just needs to go through that list.
Okay.
Also, she's got some, like, she freestyles. She goes off book.
Really? She's a really good rapper, is what you're saying?
She's a hell of a rapper. She better pick up.
Call from New York, NY.
Mom, that was a great impression of a robot. Can you hear
me,
Mom?
That's what it says. Yeah, I can hear you really well. No, that's what it said. That was your announcement from Uma. Call from New York, NY.
Tell the audience who Uma is.
Uma is a telephone system.
A potato we drew eyes on.
It's a telephone system. You buy it, and then it's a VoIP, voice over IP, telephone system.
Big shout out to our sponsor, VoIP and Uma.
Mom,
I'm here with
VoIP.
Emily Heller.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Emily, how are you?
I'm doing so well. It's nice to hear your voice. I've heard so many good things about you.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Is that true, Bina?
Such good things.
Yeah, such good things. Today she has to say good things. Right,
you know I love you very much.
Yeah, same here. Okay.
We've got such a warm relationship.
Anyways, let's move this along.
Yeah, let's get out of the danger zone.
Move forward and say sorry, okay?
Say sorry,
Dina. What? Okay?
Right now?
Yeah, say sorry.
For what, Mom?
That's what I'm going to talk about. It's about saying sorry today.
I mean, you're getting better and better at this.
That was a very classy transition.
Sorry.
All right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Emily, are you sorry?
Yeah. But wait, I want to hear what you have to say about this. I'm very sorry.
Okay. Very sorry. Good. All right. I mean, I'm sure everybody's sorry about something, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Almost every day you could be sorry for one little thing that you said or did or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But remember how I talked to you about the five simple steps to happiness, and the last one was actually say sorry. And I was thinking about this today because, you know, saying sorry is one of the hardest things to do. And quite often you actually think it's not your fault and you shouldn't be saying sorry.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've had an experience now with my sister, which I didn't really have much contact with. And we said sorry to each other, and it just feels great, you know. And so what it says in that five simple steps of to happiness, it says start by apologizing today. It's never too late to repair a friendship with a loved one. Once you do so, you will realize what an immense impact this can have on your happiness. And it's just so nice to be able to talk to her about everyday life and what's happening and, you know.
Great,
and,
Mom.
You kind of feel really, really, really sorry for the time that you lost, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's the other side of the coin where I'm waiting for people to apologize to me. So maybe we can start to repair some things there. And you know what I'm talking about, Sabrina, right?
What have I done right? to you?
What? No, Bina, you know who I mean, the family.
Oh, the family. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's talking about
when I came out of the closet, how my father's side of the family, who's Islamic, and they were very horrible about their reaction. They basically broke up with me. And then my parents were in a position where they're like, well, if you're not going to talk to our daughter, then don't talk to us. So my mom's talking about waiting for that apology. So what are the tips on that?
To them?
Well, I would think that the tip on that would be to let go. Is it?
For them?
A little bit?
For them?
Yeah. It's for them to apologize.
Or for you dealing with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, but on the other hand, you know, on the other hand, I wouldn't want an apology just for the sake of the apology. It has to come from the heart. And I think that text message that you got from that lady that you sent me in that email.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
Where she's saying that if you really love somebody, you will love them no matter what.
Yeah.
And if that's not happening, that maybe they don't really love you, you know, that much.
Oh, she was talking. I did this talk, and this lady who was wearing like a hijab, like there was a Q&A after. Q&As are my favorite, best time to feel self-important. Who was like, thank you, because, you know, like, labels are labels, and I understand that, like, someone might look at me and think, I don't understand you, so then she wrote me a message on my Facebook page after, and she was like, yes, about your family, that whatever my mom just said, about, like, if they loved you, if the ones that love you will come around, if they don't come around, maybe they didn't have the right kind of love for you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, but you see, I think the problem is, too, the longer you wait, the worse it will get. Because the longer you wait, you know, the harder it is to say sorry, you know.
Yeah.
That's
because
what
you're
I
also
feel.
Like
I
dredging
feel that,
up
you
old
know,
wounds.
Now, yeah. now they feel like it's so long, we don't have to say sorry. It happened so long ago and, you know, it doesn't really matter, you know. We love Sabrina anyways, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
But for me, it is very important that they talk about it and they say sorry. And as I said, it has to come from the heart. They have to really mean it. Otherwise, it doesn't mean anything. Hmm. You know, if I feel that it's just a political thing, you know, just for the sake of peace.
Yeah.
Then for me, it doesn't mean anything really.
So then the real trick is like not even just saying sorry, is just having more empathy and more compassion. So that you can truly get to a place where...
Yeah, and I think the best thing is to educate yourself, you know, educate yourself about things, educate yourself about gay people and all that, and then come to a conclusion, you know. Knowledge is power, you know.
Yeah,
if you
man.
Don't have knowledge, you know, you're pretty much in any topic you can say about anything. If you don't have the knowledge, you're not powerful, you know.
Mommy, you're powerful.
I wish I would be, you know.
I mean,
you know, I say all these things, you know, and people could turn it around and could say, well, why don't you forgive them and, you know, say sorry to them?
Why would you say sorry? No, I mean, like, I think that I get it. That the whole thing with all of this stuff is that it's very broad. And yes, the more forgiveness you have, the more you let go, the less baggage you have. And to be honest about this topic, I do feel like I have kind of let it go, and I'll take from them whatever relationship they would like to offer. I don't need to I don't need a specific kind of apology, but I think for you, it's a different situation.
I've always been a little bit like that already as a child, that I just felt that things had to be fair. And that's a kind of a difficult thing too, because life is not fair, you know.
I feel the same way.
Things happening out there. But for me, you know, like things, it's just important that it's a little bit fair. It doesn't have to be 100% fair, but I have to feel a little bit of fairness, you know. And I don't know. I just, you know, I was talking to my sister about it, the one that I have contact with now again, and I explained to her, you know, about the family and all that, and, you know, she says, but you can forgive them. I said, yes, I will, but they have to come around they and have they to have offer to something. Come to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, she says, well, do they know that? And I said, yes, they know that. They've been told time and time and time again.
Well, I think that they all listen to this podcast, so this episode might be the unlocking...
Maybe. I don't know.
Factor.
I don't know. I mean, you know, somebody came around in the family, and that was very nice. And after that happened, I thought that's the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, because they do seem to move in the herd. You know what I mean? Right?
That was...
Anyways, that's my message for the day, ladies.
All right, mommy. I love you so much.
I love you,
I'm sorry for everything I've ever done to you.
Okay. Same here.
Bye.
All right. Bye. Bye. Love you both. Bye.
Love you too.
She just gave you her love.
That's really powerful.
Yeah, she's getting so much better at it too.
I also feel like that's a good thing. You know, like people say just kind of like remote, like, you know, automatically like love you at the end of a phone call. I feel like we should also add sorry for everything I've ever done.
Yes, totally.
Me too. That was a great little like back and forth there.
All right. In conclusion, guys, I'm sorry for everything.
Yeah, it's really hard to apologize without also trying to protect your ego at the same time. But I feel like when I remember, like when people apologize to me, it's not like I like people so much more if they're like, I just want to say I'm sorry for that. Yeah. That was wrong and I'm sorry without saying, but you need to understand where I come from.
Yes.
Like, saying that to
and
someone
isn't
else,
the
like,
point of it to get through to, it to move on
and to be on good terms with someone, like, just fucking, even if you think you're right, just like fucking swallow your pride and be like, I am really sorry. Because like when you think about how you perceive, it's like, how do you want to be treated? Like, how do you want to be apologized to? Like, it's a really hard thing to just say, but then once you say it, it's like there are no negative consequences to giving someone a sincere apology. And there are negative consequences for like making a last claim for your own fucking case.
Girl, you said it.
Yeah.
Knowledge is power. This has been an empowered episode of My Sexy Podcast. Please follow Emily at
Mr. Emily Heller.
Mr. Emily Heller. Guys, listen. It's hard to not do cartoony at the end. Guys,
why
I'm a
not?
Cartoon character. Why not?
Yeah, do it. People don't know what you look like. For all they know, you look like a cartoon character.
I'm sorry for ever thinking you wouldn't give me that credit. Guys, Sabrina Jalice here saying, ba-da-dang-dang-dang-dang-dang-dang-dang. Apologize. That's it!
Stone cold, don't you know you are my heartache?
That question was nonsense.
I go fooling around and chasing old mistakes.